Greetings to the bright Estonians in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, a column at WorldNet Daily really has lit a fire the internet regarding the battle to stop the killing of unborn children. And if you voted for John McCain, this discussion might interest you. If you voted for Alan Keyes, whoever you voted for, if you're aware of the debate, the divide between those who advocate regulating the killing of unborn children and those who say that it's wrong to regulate the killing of the innocent, and therefore we have to promote the personhood, the right to life, the life at conception principles, well, then this might interest you. For everybody who voted for John McCain, think of what happened after the election was over. Right, and compare it to Alan Keyes out in California. Alan Keyes was on the ballot in Colorado, Florida, Texas, I think. Yeah, we got a call from a pro-lifer in Texas, said Alan Keyes was on the ballot there and in California. And Alan Keyes is in court right now using any method, whatever at his disposal, to continue to oppose Barack Obama. Look at John McCain. I mean, John McCain falls all over himself to say that he's going to do everything he can to help Barack Obama succeed as president. Do you see the difference? There's no comprehension by these mainstream Republican candidates, the ones who get the support and the money of the party infrastructure, that we're in a battle between good and evil. There's no comprehension. It's only process. So you've got McCain saying, I'm going to do everything I can to support Barack Obama. And you've got Alan Keyes fighting in California. Now, it happens to be with the issue of Barack Obama's birth certificate. And we talked about that weeks ago before the election on one program. Just that if it's true, Barack Obama has pulled off one of the biggest cons in the history of America. This would be bigger than selling the Grand Canyon, don't you think? This would be bigger than selling the Grand Canyon to the Japanese. This would be a person pretending to have been born in America when he knows he was born in Kenya and pretending and pulling a scam on the whole country. But the country is a willing accomplice, of course. The country didn't care. But there is a lawsuit, and now the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear, you know, to consider, take up the matter 5 days before the Electoral College meets to officially vote for Barack Obama for president for the next 4 years. And we have Alan Keyes in California responding to the federal court. You know, the attorney Berg, Philip Berg, the attorney from Philadelphia, who filed this lawsuit saying that Barack Obama's website, his campaign website, had an obviously forged birth certificate up where you could read his sister's name under the print for his name. So that went to federal court, and the federal judge ruled that Philip Berg has no standing as an American citizen and a voter to take it to court. He has no jurisdiction, no standing to complain if Barack Obama, whether he was born in America or not, the Constitution has clear rules at this point in our history. You have to have been born in America. And so the federal judge, he didn't rule that, no, you're wrong, Barack Obama was born in Hawaii. He didn't rule that. He said it doesn't matter where he was born. You don't have any standing as a voter, and neither does any voter have standing to challenge Barack Obama and to ask that the Constitution be upheld regarding qualifications for president. Now, that was just a silly and absurd ruling. And our judges, of course, they don't go by the Constitution. They don't do that. Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, they don't go by the Constitution. They go by what they want to rule. That's how they go. That should be obvious to all of us. But what Alan Keyes did in California, being on the ballot for president with America's Independent Party, he filed suit saying that, hey, I'm not a voter. I'm a candidate for president. And regardless of that absurd ruling that a voter has no standing, I'm not a voter. I'm a candidate. So I should have standing. And I challenge Barack Obama's qualifications to be president. So Alan Keyes is fighting against Barack Obama, and he's not going to make a commitment to help Barack Obama have a successful presidency, like John McCain has said. So you voted for John McCain, and before the election, you knew that John McCain would be an Obama ally. You knew that before the election, and here we are after the election, and as of election night, John McCain has bragged about this. And Human Events magazine, remember the favorite publication of Ronald Reagan, Conservative Human Events? And we reported this here on Bob and Your Live before the election. They said, you know, Barack Obama, he won't really need 60 senators in Congress in order to end a filibuster by the Republicans. The Democrats will only need 58 senators because they can always count on a few liberal senators to help the Democrats, as they've always done. And they named a few liberal senators, U.S. senators. There were the two from Maine and that one senator from Arizona. What was his name? Oh, yeah, John McCain. Do you get that? That's by a leading conservative publication before the election, saying when Barack Obama wants to get one of his liberal pro-abort judges on the U.S. Supreme Court, a lot of the Republicans would oppose him, but he could probably count on John McCain. And of course he could. Of course. So the guy you lobbied for, the guy you campaigned for, the guy you sent money to, is the guy who's going to help Barack Obama with his evil agenda. And they'll just tweak it a little. The Republicans and the Democrats at this point, the Republicans and the Democrats, they have just variations on their wickedness. The Republicans are pro-choice with exceptions. And every 4 years, they have fewer and fewer exceptions, by the way, to their pro-choice positions, the Republicans. But they're pro-choice with exceptions. All right, so now Jill Stanek, in her column at WorldNet Daily, she really opened a Pandora's box. She talked about the terrible divide, both ends against the middle, in the pro-life movement. And she pointed out, and she quoted some other publications, saying that the pro-life initiatives had significant opposition from pro-life organizations. And so she said, for example, in South Dakota's abortion, she called it a ban. It was a regulation. It said you can't kill the baby unless this and this and this is true. Like if you go to the abortionist and say I was raped, you just allege it, you could kill the baby. If you go to the abortionist and you allege you're pregnant from incest, you can kill the baby. If it's a serious health problem, you could kill the baby. So if their abortion regulation passed, the incidence of rape in South Dakota would have increased 3,000%. That's what would have happened. It would have increased 3,000%. But anyway, it failed. And so Jill Stanek points out that pro-life groups actually oppose South Dakota's regulations, like American Life League and South Dakota Right to Life. Well, praise the Lord for those groups, because these regulations backfire, and they backfire, and they take our conservative judges and move them to reject the right to life of the unborn, because they teach conservative judges that you can regulate the killing of innocent children. So these regulations utterly destroy the principled position of the pro-life movement that these are kids and we have no right to kill them. And then Jill Stanek points out in Colorado, Amendment 48 failed. and it had opposition from National Right to Life and Americans United for Life. And by the way, I had a debate with the president of Americans United for Life, Clark Forsyth, and one of these days we will we'll air that. It took longer than a single show, so we'll have to package it in two programs. But it's true that those groups, they opposed Colorado's Personhood Amendment, National Right to Life and Americans United for Life. But why does Jill Stanek leave out George W. Bush? Why does she leave him out? And for that matter, why leave out John McCain? I mean, John McCain has long opposed any Human Life Amendment initiative in the U.S. Senate. Right now, Senator Roger Wicker's Life at Conception Act, he opposes that. Oh, he doesn't oppose it. He just hasn't supported it. Come on, that's MIA, no? That's missing in action. You've got supposedly the two leading pro-lifers in the nation, George W. Bush and John McCain, and they're MIA, they're missing in action. They don't support Colorado's Personhood Amendment, and they don't support South Dakota's regulations. They don't support either? Come on. Are you kidding me? They're not even missing in action. They're not MIA. They're AWOL. They're absent without leave. I mean, that is just utterly despicable. And National Right to Life, they didn't even support South Dakota's regulations. They didn't even do that. They did not even support South Dakota's regulations. And they can't say, well, it's because we're against personhood. We're against that strategy. That wasn't personhood. It was a regulation. I mean, why would National Right to Life not support South Dakota's regulation? They support regulations. Well, one reason is the NIH, not invented here syndrome. And how do you get donations for something that another pro-life group has done? How do you do that? So that's to be really harsh on their motives. It's just astounding. But Jill Stanek, she should include George W. Bush and John McCain. So now let's go to Jill Stanek's column, a rebuttal that I had the opportunity to put on her blog. And thankfully, Jill Stanek runs a blog. And she, you know, it's an open blog to the public. So I posted there, and Jill Stanek has come back and forth, and we've debated back and forth. But let me share to you what I posted there, and we could talk through it. By the way, our phone number here, 1-800-8-NYARTS, 1-800-836-9278. And you could go to Jill Stanek's blog. You could search NYART, E-N-Y-A-R-T, and find this thread and these posts. But so Jill Stanek wrote this column that's out in WorldNet Daily called Pro-Life Movement, Both Ends Against the Middle. And I posted a reply on her blog as a spokesman for American Right to Life. And I wrote, Jill, I'd like to present here something indisputable about the divide between purists and incrementalists. Okay, that's what they call us, purists. The incrementalist, and this is what I'm claiming is indisputable, all right? Think this through. This is indisputable. The incrementalists, like National Right to Life and others, have long opposed significant pro-life groups, legislation, and leaders for tactical reasons. Tactical. Wrong time, wrong approach, too militant, etc. The purists, unquote, the purists oppose incrementalists for moral reasons. You get it? You have National Right to Life, well, they think it's the wrong tactic. And you have the purists, like me, that's what they call me, opposing the incrementalist for moral reasons. We have no right to recognize permission to kill some kids in order to try to save others. So I write, Jill, that's an indisputable observation. God gives us enormous tactical latitude and no moral latitude. Do you get that? As far as tactics we use, strategy, God gives us enormous latitude on the strategy and tactics that we use to battle injustice. How much moral latitude does he give us? How much moral latitude? None. There is no moral latitude from God. None. You cannot do wrong that good might come of it. Why not? Because you're disobeying God. That's number one. That should be enough. And number two, because it backfires. So those are the two reasons. So when you disobey God to try to stop abortion, you end up prolonging it. That's what you end up doing. So I claim that here's an indisputable observation that the incrementalists oppose the personhood movement for tactical reasons, and the purists, like me, oppose incrementalists for moral reasons, and that God gives us enormous tactical latitude so that when National Right to Life opposes personhood efforts around the country, that is like the utmost in being a control freak. That's the utmost. They don't only just refuse to support it, they typically undermine those efforts. Whereas when we look at the incrementalist, now we're not infallible, I'm not, here at Bob and Yurt Live, so you have to test the claim. But our claim is what they are doing is immoral. It's immoral. They have no right from God to negotiate with the God-given right to life. You have no such right. So I continue in my post at jillstanek.com. As succinctly as we can, I give a list below showing why groups like American Right to Life oppose regulations. And then we will apply those ideas to the Born Alive Infant Protection Act that Jill Stanek, you championed. Now, this is where it gets personal. Only because Jill is the one who fought for years for the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. So on her side, I think it gets personal. And this may be hard for you to read, Jill. And then I write that you are incorrect to report that the purists oppose incrementalism. That's simply incorrect, Jill. As American Right to Life, and by the way, she's been informed of this repeatedly over a long period of time, that when she says we're against incrementalism, she's not being truthful. And I make the case here again. Jill, you are incorrect to report that the purists oppose incrementalism. As American Right to Life's widely reported full-page open letters have always stated, quote, incrementalism is fine. You get that? Incrementalism is fine. Compromised incrementalism violates God's command, do not murder. When you compromise on this fundamental law, do not murder, you undermine the goal of reestablishing the personhood of the child, and you cannot possibly foresee all the negative consequences. So American Right to Life opposes every law that regulates the killing of unborn children because regardless of the intention, such laws, and now I'm going to give you bullets. I'm going to give you eight quick bullets, okay? Laws that regulate the killing of unborn children, first, they make abortion seem more palatable to the public and politicians. That's what they do. Kids have to get permission from their parents. You have to wait 24 hours, so it's not a rash decision. If it's especially a late-term abortion, we don't allow it. It's a partial birth abortion. You have to do it in a way that seems less despicable, less shocking. So number one, American Right to Life opposes laws that regulate the killing of unborn children because they make abortion seem more palatable to the public and politicians. And two, they merely prune the abortion weed and they strengthen its root. And three, They violate God's enduring command, do not murder, by reauthorizing abortion. That's what they do. They say, well, if you sign this piece of paper, that's called informed consent, then you could have the abortion. That's reauthorizing the supposed right to kill a child, an innocent child. All children are innocent, of course, at that age. And three, no, that was three. And four, they call upon judges to uphold laws that regulate killing the innocent. Do you get that? Our pro-life regulations call upon judges to uphold our laws that regulate killing the innocent. So National Right to Life is trying to pass a law that says that the doctor has to offer a painkiller to the mother for the fetus, and then he could kill the baby. So if that law got on the books in some state and it was challenged, National Right to Life would ask a judge to uphold the law that regulates killing innocent children, that says, well, you can kill this baby if you offer a painkiller anesthetic to the mother. Then you could kill the baby. And what that does is it turns conservative judges, it turns them increasingly against the right to life of the unborn. And there's three more. And our pro-life regulations that say you can't kill the baby unless, that say do this and then you could kill the baby, those laws could end up authorizing 100 million abortions of all kinds after Roe v. Wade is overturned. 100 million abortions. Our laws can end up authorizing those abortions because we have hundreds of laws on the books across this country saying if you wait 24 hours, then you could kill the baby. If you sign the sheet of paper, then you could kill the baby. So those laws then would be the nails that keep open the abortion clinic doors when Roe v. Wade is overturned. And we'd have to fight to overturn our own laws. Then the last two, those laws, and I just pointed out, will keep abortion legal if Roe v. Wade is merely overturned. And we oppose abortion regulations because they end with the meaning, quote, and then you could kill the baby, unquote. And by the way, online, you could go to that website, and then you can killthebaby.com. You could go to that. Now, Jill, and this is in the post I made to Jill Stanek's blog, to contrast the goals and practical results of the Born Alive Infant Protection Act that you championed, the goals were two. There were two goals: to save kids and to harm the political career of politicians who would oppose it. Those were the two goals. They want to save kids and hurt the politicians who would oppose protecting children who are born alive after an abortion. Okay, regarding that second goal, to hurt the political career of politicians who oppose the Born Alive Act, well, Barack Obama, who's the most visible opponent of the Born Alive Act, was elected president. So immediately following the whole Born Alive Act deal. So that didn't work. That goal, at least, you know, and you can't hold people accountable for when their goals don't work because other people have free will. But that didn't work. Then how about the goal of saving kids? Well, the practical results of the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, that's if the abortionist does the abortion, the baby survives. Then in Illinois, Jill Stanek, a nurse, saw that the hospitals were basically killing the kids, letting them die because no one wanted them. And so she passed the law, got it on the books, the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. And the practical results of that act, it sounds nice, doesn't it? Born Alive Infant Protection Act. Here are the practical results. That act, as a result of the Born Alive Act, the abortionist now makes absolutely certain that he kills the baby. That's the first result. There are no babies that are protected by the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. There are none. The abortionist just makes certain that he kills the baby. Two, it cleans up the image of the abortion industry. They don't look as bad now. They're not killing the babies after they're born. Three, it enabled pro-abortion politicians to vote yes to improve the abortionist reputation. So the pro-aborts, many of them, voted yes. And they knew that Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry will now look better with this regulation. And four, the Born Alive Act provides cover for liberal politicians who support it to show that they are not extreme. And fifth, NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League, they did not oppose the Born Alive Act because this pro-life action improves the abortion industry survivability. Abortion will survive longer because of this bill. So NARAL, the leading legal protective arm of abortion in America, they said, we're not opposing it. We're neutral. And this bill squandered the blood of children killed after birth by passing a law that saves no kids. Saves no kids. And this Born Alive Act distracts from the essential effort to recognize the God-given right to life of the unborn. And this act now makes it that the baby's death is quicker and likely more violent. That's the difference. The baby's death now with this act is quicker. The baby dies sooner and more violent. And finally, fewer kids live with the Born Alive Infant Protection Act because those who would survive now have no chance whatsoever because they're killed more quickly, more violently, more certainly. So this makes us feel good, doesn't it? To do, at least we're doing something. The fact that it doesn't work and it's counterproductive, well, that's beside the point. So I end up telling Jill Stanek that a number of slaveholders actually advocated regulating slavery to make it more tolerable for the public. Slavery. And that's, of course, why NARAL went neutral on the Born Alive Act and why so many pro-abortion politicians voted yes, not only to make themselves look humane to the gullible masses, but also to remove the second greatest vulnerability to legalized abortion. I mean, that killing a baby after it's born alive, that was the second greatest vulnerability to legalized abortion. The single greatest vulnerability to legalized child killing was the brutality of partial birth abortion. That was the number one greatest vulnerability. And we wasted 15 years on a PBA ban that never had the authority to stop even a single abortion, although it did raise $250 million for the pro-life industry. So, hey, we're out of time. Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada at a great school, and kgov.com.